What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, you got the Washington Wizards back to their old ways. You had a really fun stretch. They were 4-1 over their last 5 games. They were 5-4 over their last 9. They were playing their best basketball of the rebuild. It was bound to happen where you kind of have another game where they're the 2020 324, 24, 25 Wizards just getting completely dismantled. You saw that throughout the 3-20 start, and you saw it again tonight. Wizards fall 141 to 115 to the Minnesota Timberwolves at Capital One Arena. Again, like I mentioned, not a lot went the Wizards' way. It's not going to be, the fun, exciting recap for me that you heard after they destroyed the Nets, and it was their fourth win in 5 games. Some good recaps in the past, but this one again is going to be a little bit more down. And it's just because, you obviously had the Wizards, who I didn't think played one of their best games of the season, but the Timberwolves simply were outstanding. It was a second night of a back-to-back for them, and I honestly thought they came in here looking like the fresher team, looking like the team that was home and got some rest, and not the team that played and won a tough game at the in Miami last night, traveled, got in late to DC, and completely dismantled the Wiz. So of course I'm going to be here to recap it and break it all down for you. You got to sort of start with a little bit of some talk about the Gobert and Sarr matchup. Obviously, 2 7-footers out of France, and they played together on the French team, and obviously they were talking after and before the game, so they're close. And defensively, you like for Sarr to reach the peak that Gobert has been. He's, I think, won 3 or 4 Defensive Player of the Years. I feel like he's one of the more sort of disrespected players. He's kind of made a meme by a lot of NBA fans, but I mean, tonight he was so good on both ends. He doesn't have an offensive bag. He can't shoot at all, but he makes his layups. He blocks shots. He was a menace down low. Sarr, tried his best, got some shots up over. I thought they were good looks, but you had a guy in Gobert that made them pretty difficult shots, really good contests from him, and I enjoyed the matchup. It's a nice maturing moment for Sarr, where and a learning moment where it's like, hey, you got dominated in that matchup. Sarr did an emphatic dunk in the first quarter, had 7 points in his first stint, didn't score from that point, finished 3 of 10, not one of his better games. On the offensive end, struggled to sort of get positioning with Gobert on the glass. And on the defensive end, especially, I thought Gobert did a good job of getting some offensive rebounds, of sealing Sarr and getting position to draw some fouls on Sarr. It was a good matchup. It was a fun matchup. It's a matchup that you need to see from Sarr. And he's in year two. He's 20 years old. He's leading the league or second in the league in blocks. He's on a minutes restriction. He's averaging way better numbers efficiency wise, scoring wise, rebounding and passing wise across the board. And so it's unfair to take this one matchup and just be like, hey, you got to be disappointed in it, because he can't be. I feel like it was a moment for Sarr where it's, one of two things. Number one, he's only 20, he's still maturing, and obviously this is a matchup that in the future, right, you'd like to see him win. But it's also a case in point of a longtime veteran in this league, 4-time DPOY in Gobert, just having his way. And that's going to happen as Sarr starts to mature. But that was one of my takeaways, is sort of how dominant Gobert looked against Sarr. I mean, what did Gobert finish with? 29 minutes, 18 points on 8 of 10 from the field, 14 boards, 6 of which were offensive, and was a plus 32. Again, just dominated Sarr, who, like I said, 7 on 3 of 10, only 3 boards, 4 assists, was a minus 16. No blocks to Gobert's 4. It's just a it was a moment of hopefully a learning moment for Sarr, but also a moment where you just kind of have to sit back and appreciate the greatness, right, on both ends of Gobert. And that was the case with Anthony Edwards too. I mean, he's just so good. He's so good on both ends, but offensively, he's got no flaws. He can score from the mid-range if he banks it in. He can score from 3. He shot 6 of 10 tonight from 3, 14 of 21 from the field, 35 points in 30 minutes, was a plus 30. 4 steals, he does everything. Obviously that's exactly what you want, number one pick, and the Timberwolves got it. They're really good. Bilal had that assignment tonight. I didn't think he did bad. You know, Anthony Edwards is really good. A lot of his shots. There was one in particular. He had a buzzer beater to end the first quarter. Bilal was in his face, and he just hit a tough shot. He had a couple moments like that where you just got to sit back and say, "Hey, nice shot." You know, there's really not much you can do when it comes to a guy that can score the basketball like Edwards can. And obviously, Bilal had some moments where I thought he was out of position. But overall, like, I'm not disappointed in Bilal's defensive minutes. You know, sometimes you got to tip your cap, and I feel like tonight is another example of that, especially when you're a guy in Bilal who's going to draw the opponent's best player on a nightly basis. Like, it's not that you can expect him to shut everyone down. He can make it difficult, and I thought at times he did on Edwards, but like Gobert, right? I didn't think Sarr played awful on defense, but Gobert outmatched him. He outclassed him. It was better offense, and it's the same with Edwards. So I saw some people kind of getting on Bilal defensively. I'm not too disappointed. Bilal played well. Anthony Edwards is just way better on offense, and obviously that's gonna happen, right? When he's an all NBA player going up against Bilal, who's still trying to find his way in the league. So those were sort of two of the matchups I highlighted, and the Timberwolves won those matchups. It's a big reason they won by so many. They only put up 141, and it's weird for me to say only there, but they were on pace to score well above that. They had 108 entering the fourth quarter, right? So I mean, they were on pace to probably drop around 150, and obviously the fact that they rested their starters for the whole fourth quarter, right? That contributes to it. I thought the Wizards just didn't do enough defensively. Didn't offer enough resistance. That's on Sarr, right? I thought he didn't win his matchup, and overall didn't think he did enough protecting the rim. It's difficult. I mean, they have Randle, they have Gobert, they have Edwards. They're a handful, right? Especially inside when you got Naz Reid coming off the bench. Pretty tough matchup for the Wizards. And I knew that coming in. My keys to the game, one of them was to clean the glass. You can't let Gobert, guys like him and Randle dominate. They combined for 8 offensive rebounds. You can't have that, right? Another key to the game was to obviously limit turnovers, and I thought the Wizards didn't do a good job of that either. It's when the Wizards don't turn the ball over. It's simple. They're competitive, and they win a lot of those games. Tonight they turned it over a bunch. Finished with how many turnovers? 19 turnovers. Allowed 19 fast break points and 13 off those turnovers. So again, you know, it's sort of the same things that start to kill the Wiz, right? Didn't play particularly well on the inside, and obviously allowed Minnesota to dominate in the paint. Minnesota 76 paint points to the Wizards 48. I mean, that's domination right there. Again, offensive rebounds. The Wizards got out rebounded throughout the game, 51 to 35, allowed 17 offensive rebounds. Can't happen. And then obviously, like I said, with the turnovers, 19 can't happen. So again, like, it's not like you can sort of sit back and say this is a disappointing loss and so many things went wrong. I honestly think this was, number one, it was bound to happen. Like, you can't expect a young team like this to continue to play well. They hadn't faced an opponent, right, throughout this winning stretch. Like Minnesota, they faced the Raptors, which record-wise was the only winning team that they'd beat. They'd beat some teams trying to win, though, right? That were healthy in the Bucks and twice in the Grizzlies. Beat the Nets too, who won again today. But a lot of those teams weren't unbelievable. It's not like I mentioned they were beating the Thunder, right? But you could be excited about them beating some teams that they were should have been competitive with, and they did, and they beat them. This was probably the best opponent that they had faced in a while. You know, they faced the Spurs and they lost by 20 plus. Had some other wins in there, and then they faced the Suns, who are playing well. They lost by 14 at home, and now it's a 26 point loss at home to a Timberwolves team that's 23 and 13. They're playing really well, 11 and 7 away from the Target Center. So I would just sort of chalk this one up to the Wizards aren't good enough yet, and the Timberwolves are really good. They got outmatched, outclassed, outworked, and that's going to happen at some points, more often than not during a rebuild. But it's sort of nice that it's been a while since there was a game that they just got dominated. You know, like, they lost by 14 to the Suns the other night, but they were in it for the most part. Like, they were down around like 8 to 15 for most of the second half, but it's not like they were down by 35 plus at one point and pulled a little back like they did tonight against the Timberwolves. You know, they were there with Phoenix, and this is probably their first real blowout loss, I think, since that Spurs loss on the road where they lost by 25. And they were sort of competitive to begin the second half, and they just got dominated in the second half. But again, like it had been how many games since that loss? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It had been 8 games, right? Since their last, like, okay, this was a really poor effort from start to finish. And that's a good thing throughout a rebuild, because when they were 3-20, right? That's 23 games right there. These nights happened so often. It was rare when you'd get an effort like you did against Toronto in that 20 plus point win, like you did against Brooklyn with that 20 point win. I mean, they lost by 20 plus at home to the Brooklyn Nets. That was a blowout in the first part of the season when they were 3-20. And then you fast forward, right, to last game, they win by 20, albeit a depleted Nets team, but they got the job done. And so I think it's nice to say, like, this isn't a loss where you're disappointed, where, you know, nothing's going right. It's just, look, the Timberwolves are really good. The Wizards aren't, and that's the case. So apart from that, I mean, if you didn't watch the game, I think and no disrespect to Anthony Gill, really good player, or not good player, really good person. He's sort of like the ceremonial white flag. My dad and I always joke about it. You know, when Anthony Gill enters the game, you know the Wizards are probably conceding, and it's probably a blowout at that point. He entered with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, right? So that sort of summarizes, if you didn't watch, if you were watching the NFL and the Commanders and all that, and you didn't catch the game, that's kind of how it went, where, you know, Anthony Gill was put in with 5 minutes left. You had AJ Johnson, who was, again, back in the rotation, so didn't mind his minutes too much. Didn't play as much as he had played in previous games, obviously, but I believe did get some first half minutes there. Marvin Bagley only with 14 minutes, and that's because he had 4 fouls in the first half. Still didn't miss. He's now 8 of 8 over the last 2 games from the field. Very good efficiency, above 62% from the field this season. So when he was available, right, not in foul trouble, thought he was all right. Corey Kispert returned for the first time and missed 5 games with that hamstring after he had missed all that time, 10 games, I think, with the fractured thumb. Honestly, in 18 minutes, didn't think he played that bad. Was one of the better players for the Wiz. 13 points, made 2 of his 5 threes, made all 3 of his free throws, got fouled on a 3. So offensively, not bad. Was a minus 26 with 3 turnovers, so there's the negative right there. But first game back in a bit, didn't think he played particularly bad, and so that was nice to see. There was a sequence for Champagne, who had 6 points, 6 boards, where he had 2 offensive rebounds in one sequence, finished it with a layup. Next possession, goes down the floor, gets another layup. It sort of summarizes what you can expect from him, and more of a quiet night tonight from him after his season high the other night against the Nets. But again, pretty solid effort from him. Saw some Vucevic minutes. Obviously, the blowout combined with Bagley's foul trouble, Sarr not playing the best. He played 13 minutes, 8 points on 3 of 5 from the field. Not too shabby. You got Brandon minutes as well. One of the big storylines, I think, was the fact that Trey and Bub, who had been playing out of their minds throughout this better stretch for the Wiz, they couldn't buy one tonight. And again, like, Bub and Trey, I think they shot a combined. Bub was 2 of 9. Trey was 3 of 11. So that's 5 of 20 from the field. And it, through that 5 of 20, they only made 2 of their 11 threes. And they had been shooting lights out from deep. So that was another obviously reason that the Wizards got routed tonight. I didn't actually think they were bad looks. Like, yeah, if you look at the box score, you're probably like, they shot terribly and they didn't play well. I didn't think that was the case. I thought both played very well. I mean, again, Bub Carrington, 4 assists to 1 turnover. It's pretty nice. Trey Johnson had 3 dimes, and I thought a lot of them were really quality passes. He had one in particular to Sarr in transition for a dunk, another to Sarr off, you know, sort of flare where Sarr drilled a 3. Thought he actually made some good quality plays to set his teammates up, which doesn't get talked about a lot. It's, you know, he can shoot the ball, he can score. But I actually did enjoy sort of watching Trey play make a little bit. So again, him and Bob, very poor shooting night. It's bound to happen. You can't expect both to be shooting 60%+ from 3 over the last couple of games and then continue that every game, right? Good length on the perimeter for the Timberwolves, obviously disrupted them. So again, didn't think they took bad quality shots. It was pretty similar shots that they had been taking. Bub with some transition threes that didn't fall. He had been making those. Trey Johnson had a couple open looks from deep. He didn't make them when he was making them in previous games. So again, if you look at the box score, it's ugly. But if you watch the game, I actually didn't think they played too bad. Just couldn't buy one tonight. Looking over my notes real quick. That's sort of the story of the game, right? I don't have too much for you on that front. McCollum led the team with 20 points, 8 of 12 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3. Like, he was very efficient. It was one of his better shooting nights. He tried to dunk it, and then I think he realized, like, he's 34 years old, couldn't quite get up high enough and miss the dunk, which was unfortunate. The Timberwolves went down and scored 4-point swing. Doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, they would have lost by a bunch anyway. But certainly not his worst game as a Wizard, probably one of his best, efficiency wise. 10 for Middleton, pretty quiet 10 at that, didn't do too much. But apart from that, I think that covers most of like the individual performances on the night. I guess to summarize, I mean, this is for all the people, right, that were upset that the Wizards were playing well, and all the people that were tweeting or saying that they're scared that the Wizards are now not going to keep their pick because they are 2 games back of the Brooklyn Nets for the fifth worst record with 50 games remaining, right? Remember when I was trying to tell Wizards fans, like, hey, they're going to keep their pick. It's okay to be excited and to be happy that the team is playing pretty good, pretty inspired basketball, right? 5-4 over their last 9, 4-1 over their last 5 entering tonight before they lost to Minnesota. You had a lot of fans that were in the panic button with 50 games left and saying, I don't care. The season's a disaster if the Wizards aren't a bottom four team with 50 games remaining. And I tried to tell people pump the brakes because like games like this are going to happen. A lot of what they did it against solid opponents, but they weren't beating top teams. It wasn't like, okay, the Wizards are back and they're beating some really quality teams. They were beating good teams, but they obviously hadn't played an opponent like Minnesota, right? And when they ran into one, the Spurs, they lost to you twice and they lost to the Suns. So it's not like they've taken that next step, right? That leap to where, okay, you should be scared. And you revert right back to it where you lose by 26. And I raised the point to the Wizards fans that were in the camp of they need to stop winning immediately. We cannot have this. They are way too close to maybe losing the pick. Would you rather watch 50 more games like this where the Wizards are not competitive and people are playing bad on the team? They're not making the shots that they typically, and we know now that they can make. They're not playing the way that we now know they are capable of playing. They could dismantle it at home, probably would have lost by 30 or 40 if the Minnesota had played their starters the whole game. But they lost, right? So that's all that matters. No one cares about development or maturation, but they lost. And I guarantee you, a bunch of the people that were in that camp complaining probably didn't watch tonight. And that's the case. Like when you're not watching the games, it's easy to just say, oh, I checked the box score and we won. I'm disappointed because I'm just standings watching and I'm just lottery and tankathon watching. But when you're watching the games and you're watching for development, you actually know what the season is about and you know the front office understands the objective too to keep the pick. You know that you shouldn't panic if you see a couple wins here and there, and if you see a couple of good efforts and a couple of really good performances from your young guys. And that's why I tried to stress it, because the games that we had seen over that 9-10 game stretch, that's going to be pretty rare throughout the rest of the season. When they play teams like Minnesota, who do they have? Who do they have next? They play the Magic, who are a really good, really stout defensive team that are getting healthy and playing good ball. They enter at 20-16. When they play the Magic in the next game, that'll probably be another loss. And then they're at Philadelphia, who's playing good basketball. They're pretty healthy. That'll probably be another loss that's on the road. And so it's if you beat teams like New Orleans that you have coming up, that's fine. You're probably still going to lose to the other teams. And that's what I've been stressing. Like, they're beating mid teams and the bad teams, and you should do that from time to time if you're rebuilding. But that's okay because you're gonna have these losses when you're playing Minnesota, and like coming up, when they're at Denver, even without Jokic, they'll probably lose by a lot. So like it's okay, right? Now if there's 10 games left, I think panic maybe, right? But I'm just stressing to those fans that were really upset that they were winning games. Like, if this is exactly what you want, and that's the goal, and you want games like Minnesota tonight to happen the rest of the way, then that's your prerogative, and that's what you want to do. But again, it's not fun, right, to watch that, and I didn't think that there was much development going on tonight with obviously the Wizards and most of their guys not playing too well. So that's probably going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Not too much to talk about tonight. You know, realistically, just a result of Minnesota being a much better, much more complete, much more experienced ball club than the Wizards, and that kind of reflected in tonight's performance. Wizards fall to 9-25 on the season. In terms of the standings, the Nets won again today. So when you're looking at the tank standings, the Wizards are now 2.5 games back of the Nets. So they're pretty firmly 2.5 games firmly inside the bottom four. For those that believe in looking at that, right, with 50 games remaining in the season, they are 1 game up in the win column over Sacramento and New Orleans, who are 8-27 and 8-29 respectively. The Pacers, man, they're doing a really good job of tanking. They're 6-30. They've lost 12 in a row. They are awful. Maybe they'll have a couple wins coming up, but that's sort of an outlook there. The Wizards at 9 wins, and then you got a bunch of teams at 12, some at 13. So they're pretty firmly in the bottom four. But just an update there. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Wizards podcast. I'll be back, I think, on Tuesday night. It is the first of that back-to-back against the Magic, so I'll be back to recap that, and that's the next time you'll see me. So, again, thanks for listening as always. Go Wiz.